You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to River Cafe Table 4, a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios.
This is River Cafe Table 4. With me, Ruthie Rogers. On River Cafe Table 4, I talk to friends who know the River Cafe well about food, the food they cook, the food they eat, the food of their memories.
Penne with zucchini and lemon zest. Serve 6.
This week I have the wonderful, beautiful, brilliant, few adjectives, Emily Blunt.
1 kilo medium zucchini, yellow, green, or ridged.
In each episode, my guest reads a recipe they have chosen from one of our cookbooks.
2 tablespoons extra virgin olive oil, 250 grams unsalted butter, 1 garlic clove peeled and thinly sliced, 350 grams penne, 1 bunch of fresh mint leaves roughly torn, 2 lemons, preferably Amalfi. Wash and trim the zucchini and cut into small pieces. And in a large saucepan, heat the olive oil with 100 grams of the butter. Add the zucchini and stir. Season well, adding the garlic. Cook gently, stirring from time to time for 20 minutes. Bring a pot of salted water to the boil. Add the penne to the water and cook 10 minutes or until al dente. Drain and add the zucchini. Add the remaining butter and the mint leaves, mix thoroughly, grate lemon zest on top.
Thank you, Emily. Here we are in the River Cafe, late afternoon, looking at the restaurant, getting ready actually for the evening service.
Can't wait.
I'm so happy that you chose this recipe because it is one of my favorites. Actually, I say that most times, that every recipe is my favorite, but this one is. And I was wondering, why this recipe? Do you cook it?
Honestly, it just has 3 of my favorite things in it. I just wanted to pick one of your pasta dishes because it is my ultimate favorite thing and what I crave most.
And did you grow up eating pasta?
Yeah.
Pasta, the food of your childhood?
But it was more like spaghetti, you know?
Yeah. Who cooked in your house?
My mum. My mum did it.
Tell me about her cooking.
Well, God bless her. She had 4 kids, and I'm sure we were all wanting different things. And she just had so many kids and so little time that very often she'd be like, you know, you get what you get and you don't get upset. But I do have this lasting memory of her spaghetti bolognese and then always wanting just pasta with butter and cheese as well. So she would always let us have the pasta with the butter and cheese if we had the bolognese first. And I find myself doing it to my kids. I will bribe them. They've got to have the sauce pasta and then they can have just the butter and
cheese. Butter and cheese.
That's it.
When kids come to the River Cafe for lunch, families, you know, 2 pasta, butter and cheese. But in fact, it is really delicious.
It's actually delicious. I have to be careful not to shovel it into my mouth as I'm serving it to them. Yeah. They love lasagna. Yeah, they love... I mean, I've always made them all kinds of pasta sauces and I'll sneak all kinds of things in there and try and get it past them. My oldest one will try most things. Steak, chicken. Neither of them want the fish, apart from sushi. Love
they don't
sushi.
Eat fish. It's funny about, yeah. I know. Yeah, my stepson's dad didn't eat fish till he was about 30, I think.
It's so weird. I don't know why.
Fear of fish. Maybe the way they look or maybe the bones.
Maybe it's the way they look. To be honest, I think it is more the way they look. They kind of envision what really they look at.
Yeah,
and it kind of grosses them out.
Yeah. We were once in Greece. He was about 4 and he was fishing. He'd stand there all day. We made him this little fishing rod in the harbor. And in the end, Richard, my husband, actually went to the market and bought a fish, and we all dove down, put the fish on the hook. And then I think he never ate a fish again for a long time.
We had a fishing experience in Martha's Vineyard where we like to go every summer because John's from Boston and his whole family is sort of around there. And it's a magical place, Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Absolutely love it. It's so bizarre and bohemian, special. But we took the kids fishing, and Hazel pulled in a fish, and it flopped around on the deck, and she screamed. Never recovered. Yeah. She was like, it's bleeding! Like, it was awful.
It's very real. So do they cook with you? Do they come in the
they
kitchen?
They do. I make this chicken noodle soup that they really love.
How do you make that?
Well, I actually use ginger in it, and it has this kind of richness to it. Either I'll use leftover roast chicken, or I'll sort of sear some chicken thighs. I usually like using chicken thighs, boneless, skinless. They're like a dream, aren't they? You can kind of put them in anything. And it's got carrots and celery and onions and beautiful chicken stock wine and those egg noodles, and they just love it.
I always say you should always have chicken soup around. I always have a pot of chicken soup because there is something so sustaining about it.
Yeah, it's very Moorish. Home. It was one of the first things I made for John, I think.
Did you?
Yeah.
Fell in love with your chicken soup. I think it's always interesting, the food we cook for an occasion. You know,
yeah.
I was going to once do a book called What to Cook When. When you're depressed, when you're broke, when you want to seduce somebody, when, you know, have somebody important coming to dinner. Did you think about that when you were cooking for him?
Well, it's funny. I guess I just made something that I knew he would love, like, I mean, a roast chicken. Who doesn't love roast chicken? And the roast chicken I love is Ina Garten's roast chicken. It's called her engagement chicken, because I think when people make it for people, they get engaged or something. Lemon, garlic, onions up the chicken, thyme, salt and pepper, all that.
Yeah.
And you scatter onions around the chicken, but you pack them in really tight into the tray. And then you roast them really high, about an hour and 20 minutes, and they're done and they're perfect. And then when you take the chickens out, you then kind of sauté in some wine and some butter and into that oniony, garlicky mixture. Yeah. Oh my God, it's divine. It's really sticky and yummy.
And then he fell in love.
That's it. That's all it took.
Easy. But were you growing up? Tell me more about your mother. Did your mother work? Or she had four kids, and so her cooking was...
She was an actress when Fee and I were very little. Mm. And then she just had too many kids. She had two more after me and Fee. Mm. And then I think, you know, really felt she needed to be home with us. I don't know if she loved cooking, because it was more of a chore for her, with kids being like, I don't like risotto, I don't, you know, I think it's probably like a bit joyless at times.
Did she teach you how to do her recipes?
She did, but she sort of is a bit of a, just bung it all in, you know, she doesn't really.
So was it very British?
Yeah, very British in general, and then definitely every Sunday was the religion of the Sunday roast.
Oh, what was that? As an American, I'm really intrigued by that whole British Sunday lunch, you know.
Well, it's like Christmas dinner or Thanksgiving every Sunday. Every Sunday we would either have roast beef, roast lamb, roast chicken, or roast pork. It was one of those.
Always a roast.
Always a roast. And then we would have roast potatoes. With the beef, you'd have Yorkshire puddings. We'd have everything. We'd have the bread sauce. We'd have vegetables. We'd have gravy. Wow. I mean, I just have this lasting memory of my dad's plate just like swimming in gravy. Swimming in it.
Emily talked about Sunday roasts when she was a child. So when we're roasting meat here, we like to sear the meat and get a good colour on all sides. And then often we'll put it into the wood oven and get a dry heat into it to start the cooking process. And then maybe after 10 or 15 minutes, we'd go in with hard herbs, whether it's rosemary, sage, bay. And if it wants a splash of wine or water now, this is the same whether we're making slow roasted veal, spatchcock chickens, pot roasted beef fillet. This is the way that we like to do it.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With summer fast approaching, life tends to get busy. Seeing family, friends, hosting dinners, barbecues, picnics in the park, and everything else that comes between. What's also important is that we find time for ourselves to rest and recharge. Therapy can be a vital tool to assist you with boundaries and managing your schedule in a way that helps you stay happy and healthy. If you're looking to find a new therapist or start therapy for the first time, BetterHelp is worth a try. It's entirely online, which makes it easy, accessible, and flexible with your schedule. Completing a short questionnaire will match you to the right licensed therapist for you. If it's not working, you can change for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Ruthie today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/Ruthie.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today. Health Aid kombucha.
So when you're growing up with this, you know, really important food tradition in your house of sitting down to dinner that your mother cooked, what age did you kind of leave? Did you go to university here and stay home, or did you go abroad, or did you...
So I am the only person in my family who didn't go to university, because when I was about 17, I did this play with my school. And an agent came to see the play, and he said, I think you're really good, you should do this. And I really had a cavalier attitude towards it, because I was like, oh, okay, I'm not, you know, I wasn't really thinking about being an actress. I was sort of wanting to go to university and do languages. Like, I always loved Spanish and French, and my mum's an amazing linguist.
Is she?
And, yeah, brilliant, brilliant. She speaks like three languages. And so I was sort of inspired by that and wanted to do that. And then he said, well, why don't you give it a go? And I'd also seen from my mother how tough the industry was. You know, I didn't have a rose-tinted gaze towards it. I'd seen how damaging it can be. It's so personal, you know. So I was like, okay, well, I'll give it a go, but I don't really know if I want to do it. I can't believe I was talking like that now, because I truly am madly in love with it. But anyway, I tried it. I auditioned. I got my first job when I was 18, once I was out of school, which was a play with Dame Judi Dench, and she was just divine to me, and Sir Peter Hall directed it. I mean, it was just mad. I was just such a lucky break.
What was the play?
The Royal Family. It's like 1920s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's based on the Barrymores, their fictional family's called, the Cavendishes. And yeah, so quite soon after that, around 18, 19, I got my own place.
In London.
Then just I got my own place in Parsons Green.
Yeah.
And I was so green. I mean, I just like went and looked at it, and I just liked the look of the the colours on the walls. Yeah. So I just went with it, and my mum came over and she was like, is there any heating in here? And I realized there was no central heating in the apartment. And I was like, oh, I just got it because the walls were really cool.
I think that's a good criteria. You
know, it was a happy place. It just was freezing.
And that's very young, 18?
Yeah, it was young.
Yeah. And then did you cook at all? Did you still want to eat and cook? And,
I mean, I do remember before I did the play, I mean, you're going to be horrified to hear this because I haven't had one since. I used to go every night to Burger King and get a double cheeseburger before I went on stage. I don't know how I went on stage for 2 hours after that.
I was going to ask, you know, because it is intriguing. You know, we all think about how we work and how we eat and when we eat and when we work and how we sort of fit all that in. And so if you are in the theater or you were in the theater, would you still do that now, that you would eat before going on stage?
I think would. Like, I'm someone who needs to eat all day. Like, I'm not someone who can have three meals a day. I feel like I'm usually hungry most of the time. And so I try to do sort of 4 to 5 smaller meals throughout the day. But I couldn't eat a double cheeseburger with fries now and not want to go and have a nap.
Yeah, but you would eat.
At the time,
you would
I was 18, so I was like, oh, it's fine. Yeah. So I would get to the theater around, I don't know, I guess we would go on at 7:30. So I would eat at like 6:15 and just disgusting
just
every night.
Just eat,
every night I was obsessed with it. It was my favorite thing. I get the tube in, Piccadilly Circus, I go to Burger King, go straight to the theatre. I probably stank of burgers. And
did Judi Dench notice that you were smelling of a Burger King hamburger?
You know, she's so lovely.
I love her.
Like every night after the show, she would bring me into her dressing room and there'd be so many like famous people in there. And I was like, wow, like I was a kid. I mean, it was amazing. And Peter Bowles was in it. Do you know him?
Yeah, of course. I remember him.
And he took me to the Ivy for the first time.
Do you remember that?
I do. I remember it. I mean, I'd never been to a restaurant like that before. It was mad.
Yeah. Did you go to restaurants with your parents?
Oh, we did. I remember on a Friday night, we would go for a Chinese. It was this great little place at Roehampton. Crispy duck pancakes. And so I remember just being obsessed with that kind of thing growing up. But I feel it's a more common thing for people to take their kids out to cafes and restaurants now.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, as you say, can be the penne, butter, and cheese. But sometimes, you know, I was once amazed. We had an 8-year-old who ordered a grouse. You know?
No.
They were Italian. but
oh, see, that's incredible. That's incredible, because like I know even for Stanley and Fee, like yeah. Stanley, who is, you know, yeah. Mr. Food, yeah. even his little kids, like they have about five things yeah. that they really love, yeah. you know, and he's like, yeah. come on, you yeah. know. Like, I made a lasagna for my kids yesterday, and Hazel loves it and everything, but Violet, my little one who's four, she was really like, no, I just want the plain lasagna. I just want blanket pasta, she calls it. But I said, come on, you got to try it, and then I'll give you the blanket pasta. And then she looks at it, and she goes, it looks like a cake. I said, there you go. And then she loved it.
Yeah. What about when you leave them and you go to yeah. do a film?
Well, normally they're with me when I work, but it's hard during school time, and now they're both in school. Like, when they were little, I could kind of drag them around anywhere, but now yeah. they kind of have to be a bit more stable. So they're going to stay in London at school, and I'm doing this six-part Western, which I'm completely thrilled by. It's a heart-racing piece. It's sort of as violent as it is witty. It's thrill. And it's written by Hugo Blick, and it was brought to me about 2 years ago. We got delayed because of COVID, but I truly read the first page and I was like, I'm going to be doing this.
What was it about the first page?
It's so dynamic and arresting and beautiful. You just know the writing. It's all about the writing for me now. I'm just realizing you just cannot make a good movie out of a bad script. And there's conflict and intrigue and something different I'm in.
Are there other women?
There's a couple of other really cool female yeah. parts. There's a lot of boys. Yeah. It's like a very, but it's partly yeah. because she is presented as this aristocratic woman, as a real fish out of water in this rather brutal masculine world in 1890.
Do you eat on the film set? Do they do good food, or is it?
It depends where you
depends
are.
Depends on yeah. yeah.
I've been someplace yeah. where it's not very good. Yeah. But we're in Spain, so maybe it'll.
They
be
might.
Great.
Yeah, they might do that.
Sometimes I just try and make my own thing, and I'll bring like crock pot and
try
and whip something up during the day, so I've got something waiting for me when I get yeah. home. But I think when I'm working, I don't tend to eat sort of pasta and bread because it just makes me so
yeah,
sluggish.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm obsessed with rice.
Let's
rice
talk
is one
about
of my favorite.
Rice.
Is one of my favorite well, things on planet.
Could have chosen a risotto. Yeah. Like, what do you love about rice?
I love the taste of it. I love that you can put anything with it. I love all kinds of rice. I love that you can soak it in stuff. Like, I have this miso-soaked black rice that this chef I know does for me.
I understand that Emily loves rice, so here at the restaurant we use two different risotto rices. One is carnaroli, the other is Violona Nano rice. The carnaroli we generally use with chicken stock, and this can go with a variety of things, mushrooms, artichokes, greens, and then the smaller, fatter grain, which is the Violona Nano rice, we use with fish stocks.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
When I interviewed Michael Caine,
yeah.
he said that he'd never done a deal for a movie that was in any place other than a restaurant. Everything that was decided in his day.
Wow.
You went to the Ivy or to...
Like with your agent or something.
With your agent, with the producer. Somebody's trying to convince you to be in a movie, and it was done.
Yeah.
And I always think it's interesting how people, going back to restaurants, how people use restaurants. So some people use it to, you know, announce that they want a divorce or they
yeah.
want to fire someone. You can do a very... private thing in a public
yeah,
space.
Yeah. Do you know, I do see what you're saying about that people do use restaurants. I think for me in Hollywood, like, everyone meets in restaurants. Like, I've met cast members for the first time in a restaurant. I've met producers, directors. That's normally how I've met people. It's only recently sort of over Zoom or a phone call that
yeah.
it's very new to me because I do need to sit with someone and get a sense of them, get a sense of the vibe. And whether our energy is going to be good, whether it's going to be copacetic and a cool experience. And I'm always interested what people eat and what they order and what they drink, like if they'll have a glass of wine, yeah, or if they won't. Like, so if it's an evening sit down, I'll definitely have a drink.
Yeah.
You know, if it's someone I've never met before.
Yeah.
Because it's a bit nerve-wracking as well. But a restaurant, it is that safe, atmospheric, buzzy place where if there's a lull in conversation, it doesn't matter. There's always stuff around you that you can feed off, you know.
There was somebody I was talking to that said he absolutely did not like going into a quiet restaurant.
No.
That you need that safety. And I think that's why people do things. It might be like firing somebody or breaking up, because you can't throw a frying pan at somebody in the middle of their sentence. Or, you know, really, there is a kind of behavior. Yeah. But then also I think that a lot of people do go for a first date in a restaurant, because it does tell you something, doesn't it? How the person eats, how they treat the waiter, whether they say thank you when they put something down. It kind of does.
It's very true, and I'm always aware of how people are with, because I feel sometimes everyone's nice to me, but I always watch how people are with the PAs on set, and how are you with people working in a restaurant? Like, I want to get a real sense of who people are, how they are with everybody.
Did you ever work in a restaurant?
No, but I did work in a catering company.
How did you?
This amazing friend of my mother's, gorgeous catering company that she does, and she would hire Fee and I to be her waitresses.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was fun, actually, because the food was so good. And she'd feed us, like, extraordinary food. And I have this lasting memory of a quail egg canapé with hollandaise over it. And on this little crusty crostini, Fee and I used to just steal them. We used to, like, pop them like pills. I mean, we loved them. But I have that memory of the quail egg.
It is interesting, you know, just this conversation is about memory. You know, you might not remember so many things about that experience, but the quail's egg comes right back to you.
I do remember turning up one time and I was wearing these really ugly sandals and I had a chipped blue nail polish. I was like 16. And she thought I looked so unpresentable I had to wash dishes all night.
Oh, really?
She was like, the best place for you, dear, is in the kitchen. And I was like, oh, dear.
And what about the politics of food? You think about sustainability or about giving your kids organic food or farms.
I do.
Martha's Vineyard has so many good farms,
gorgeous
doesn't it?
Farms.
Yeah.
They have the most beautiful produce and eggs and cheese. And in Brooklyn, it's harder. I find the produce is so much better in the UK.
Better here.
Yes. It's so real. Like, the carrots are all wonky. They taste right. Like, the strawberries, the berries, everything is just doesn't taste manufactured. And I think sometimes it's not the same. Yeah. Being in the UK has been a bit of a wake-up call for me of how much better I feel the produce is here.
And I think, again, I think that seems to be something that we're all thinking about our kids, aren't we?
Definitely.
I think that generation is really interested, especially as they get older, what they're eating.
Yes.
I mean, when I have dinner, when my grandchildren are older, one's a vegan, one's a vegetarian, one's gluten-free. It's like, you know, I think the politics of food are consistent with the politics of everything.
Yes. Do you feel at the restaurant you have to adapt for people in that way?
We're really lucky to be Italian because we are so focused on vegetables.
Yes.
So a vegan can't have the egg, you know, tagliatelle, but they can have a spaghetti with peas.
Yes.
Or we do something called farinata. Have you ever had that?
So good.
You know, the chickpea flour.
Yes.
And so they don't have to have gluten and, you know, you can have a whole meal.
And I get so excited to look at your menu and just see what's changed and it changes all the time.
Yeah,
it's just so exciting.
Yeah. So if you were thinking about comfort, do you have a comfort food that you would go to? So that this could be anything. You know? It can be something that you reach for when you're feeling back to what to eat when, what to cook when.
All right, I'll
when
do
you
two
are, need
things.
Comfort. Yeah.
Like two, for me, one of my favorite things is a toasted bagel with tons of butter and Marmite.
Oh.
It's my favorite thing.
That's
but I
really
say
combining
it's
two
really,
cultures.
Oh, heaven. Mm. But I will say the other thing, if I were to, because it's pasta that I crave, is a cacio e pepe.
Yeah.
E mi chiedo val la pena di restare qui abbracciati mentre il giorno non c'è più e la luna da lassù fa da specchio ai nostri baci.
It's so simple and it's just one of my favorite things. And the first time I had it was in Rome. And
That's
I was
right.
shooting a TV series in Rome that was not a very good TV
series. Yeah.
I don't think anyone's
but you
seen
remember
it.
The catch of it.
And I was living alone in Rome and I was like 20 years old, lived there for 3 months.
Baci di amore mi baci.
It was near Campo di Fiori, and I'd go to all of these little local places, and I noticed that don't go to the tourist places.
Yeah.
And I remember this one Italian restaurant where all the locals went. The vat of wine was just put on the table. I don't know what wine it was, it didn't matter, and you get what you get, and they bring you a steak or pasta, whatever they have, and it was just heaven to eat like that, the simplicity of it. And I remember going and having cacio e pepe and people saying this, I think they called it like the peasant pasta or something. It was sort of known as being a really sort of lowbrow pasta, but I was like, but it's pasta.
I think it's a brilliant comforting food,
yeah,
because it's the cheese. Actually, pasta, butter, and cheese.
It's just got a lot of pepper
on
it.
It's got a little bit of
black
pepper.
But I literally just want to eat like my children. Maybe that's it.
Maybe that's all. That's what food is. Food and memories and childhood and comfort. Yeah. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you so much, Ruthie. Love you. Thank you.
Thank you. To visit the online shop of the River Cafe, go to shoptherivercafe.co.uk.
River Cafe Table 4 is a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, the values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.